Bring It On is a public affairs program exploring the people, issues, and events affecting the African-American communities in South Central Indiana and beyond.
Bring It On is a forum for the people, by the people, produced by an independent team of volunteers working at the studios of Community Radio WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana,
and financially supported by listeners like you.
Good evening. I'm William Hosea. Welcome to Bring It On, a multiple award-winning program, and we are Indiana's only weekly community radio show committed to exploring the people, issues, and events impacting the African-American community.
And good evening. I'm Cornelius Wright. And in today's broadcast, you'll also hear our perspective on what's relevant in the African-American world of news and local events of interest, all in the next hour on Bring It On.
But first, on the evening of November 3rd, 2015, John Hamilton won the Bloomington mayoral election with 77% of the vote. I'm glad we're continuing a tradition of progressive Democrat mayors, Hamilton said in his acceptance speech. He thanked his family members and staff, as well as Bloomington's working men and women for their support. We have a lot of good work ahead, Hamilton said. What we want is 50 years from now for people to look back and say that together all the people in this room made good decisions.
John Hamilton was born in Bloomington and attended 2 years of grade school here. After graduating from Harvard, he returned to Bloomington to attend Indiana University Maurer School of Law. He went on to have a distinguished career of public service, focused on increasing economic justice and opportunity, civil rights, and environmental stewardship. Throughout his time in Bloomington, he has served on many state and local commissions and boards, including chairing the Bloomington Commission on Sustainability and the Shalom Center Board, as well as national boards such as the National Community Land Trust Network.
Mayor Hamilton is here with us today to discuss a variety of topics, including his visions for the city of Bloomington, and especially how issues such as fostering good civic relations within the African-American community, affordable housing, and employment and volunteer opportunities within our municipal government. And with that, Mayor Hamilton, welcome to Bring It On, and thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to come and talk with us.
Thank you so much. It's a delight to be here. I love WFHB, and congrats on this great program,
too.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. Well, we're going to just get right down to it. How have your first 6 months in office been?
Well, I appreciate you reminding me of that election night buzz and feeling, you know, rereading all that stuff. I haven't thought about that for a little while because I've been diving into the work. Look, I love the job. It's a great community. I'm a progressive trying to achieve more opportunity for all people and a community that works for people, as I like to say, from all walks of life. And we have a lot of people who agree on that as a goal. Figuring out how to get it done that's the challenge. I've really enjoyed it. I enjoy work every day, and working with 700 city employees and 84,000 residents, it's really exciting and a privilege.
So Mayor Hamilton, I went back and reviewed your speech, your acceptance speech, and there are several issues here that you talked about. But the one thing that keeps coming back, and I even asked a couple of people I know, you know, is anything you might want me to say to the mayor tonight? Affordable housing just kept coming up.
Yeah. Well, you know, I did about, I don't know, like 70 house parties last year in the campaign, and affordable housing comes up at almost every opportunity when people think about what's going on in Bloomington. And on the one hand, the fact that we have a problem with affordable housing means we got a really strong housing market. We got people willing to pay a lot of money to live here. And that's good, because if you have a weak housing market, it's harder to get solutions. But what it also has meant, that without a strategy, if you have a housing market and you don't have an affordable housing strategy, you just keep reducing the ability of people of other means to live here. And I think that's been a big issue in Bloomington. We just haven't had a strategy. We've had a housing authority that's got the federal kind of world, and we've gotten some money through the city government, traditional federal money, but we haven't had a local strategy. So that's what I've I've been working on. I'm happy to talk about some of the stuff we're trying to do.
You know, I know growing up in Berkeley, which is also a college community, and years ago there were some of the same problems with the escalating prices. And I know they came up with some forms of rent control.
Mm-hmm.
Is that one of the things that have been tossed around as you've tried to, you know, deal with this problem?
Yeah, I think, you know, affordable housing, you got issues in rental and ownership. They're two different kinds of markets. Bloomington is about two-thirds rental for our residents and one-third homeowner, so rental's the bigger part. I think looking at how you protect affordable rents over the long haul is a really key issue. And I'm actually, right now, we're working with some different potential housing developers, people who want to invest money to create market housing, to say, how can we, at the same time we're creating new investments for market housing, how can we support affordable housing, including cash support? If you're doing a big new investment, you can put cash money in to support affordable housing, or what we call, often is called, inclusionary zoning, where if you're going to build, let's say, 100 units of market rate housing, you also have to build 15 or 20 or 12 units of affordable housing. Rent control is also something to look at. We haven't done that in Bloomington before, but we haven't done a lot of these things before. So I think we got to look at all of it. One of the things I also say is we got to try some stuff. You know, we had a lot of housing built over the last decade, and we didn't really get anything to support affordability out of it. And my view is, if you have private investment coming in for market rate housing, you should steer some of that value into affordable housing too. And when I say affordable, I really mean housing that's affordable from the poorest of the poor up to working families who are even above median, but they still have trouble finding housing.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just low income. It's a whole range of housing options.
So what is it that specifically makes Bloomington, causes Bloomington to have the highest fair market rental in the state of Indiana?
I think it's called Indiana University.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I really think it's the large number of people who are here who, you know, the university only houses about, give or take, one-third of their students on campus, a little less maybe. And so those two-thirds of folks, they gotta be somewhere, and a lot of them are willing to pay a fairly high price for it. So the development community has met that need. They'll build, you know, expensive places for that.
You know, here on Bring It On, we deal with issues that are prevalent to the African-American community. And would you share with us the state of diversity in Bloomington now, where we are today, the good, the bad, and where you would like to see us in several years?
Well, you know, several ways, in many ways, our community as a whole demonstrates that a commitment to and a celebration of diversity is key to our DNA and who we are. Now, that doesn't mean everybody behaves that way, because they certainly don't. And we got examples of that, too, since I've been mayor. But if you look back on the history of the community over the last number of years, the instances when the community has stood up strong to support the importance of a community that welcomes everybody and works for everybody, whether it's the immigrant community or Muslim community, whether it's African-American community, whether it's LGBTQ community, you know, we've been a voice about that. Somebody called us, the image, you know, we're kind of a blue liberal. Somebody called us a blueberry floating in a tomato soup bowl. And so I don't know that that's always been the case. I was just at the Buskirk over the weekend and reading about the integration of the Indiana Theater and George Taliaferro being invited to come in 1948 and sit on the main floor when that wasn't done. And you had the owner of the theater said, I want that to happen. And they got it done, you know, as a community commitment. That's good. So it certainly hasn't been the case all the time. But I think the community has that as our value. Now, are we achieving it? We still have significant economic and some racial segregation in housing patterns. We have a lot of segregation in housing, income segregation of housing patterns. We have challenges on our public safety forces. You know, we can talk about that, but we don't quite have the diversity I want in the police force and the fire department force. And so we got work to do.
And that was something that I was going to bring up, the police force, the fire department, as well as schools. And I know that's a tough problem. How do we recruit more minorities to Bloomington? And I know that's been a question that's been asked for the 20-some-odd years since I've lived here, so there's no quick fix, obviously. But what type of things are you trying to do to make that happen?
Well, you know, in a lot of ways, there's kind of two really different answers. One of the answers is, in my view, people of all kinds want the same things for their families, which is a high quality of life, and they want jobs, and they want good schools, and they want affordable housing and a high quality of life. And so unless we have that, we're not going to be attractive to anybody. And if we do have that, I hope we're attractive to everybody if we're a welcoming community. But, you know, there's no doubt also that there's we need to recruit and talk about the values of our community as welcoming people of all backgrounds and all races and all beliefs. You know, that's, for example, on the police force, we have 96 sworn officers right now. We're actually approved up to 100, but it's hard to hire police now. It's a tough environment around the country to recruit. People are not signing up to say, I want to be a police officer, as much as they were 30 years ago. There's a lot of reasons for that. We right now in the Bloomington Police Department, you know, continue to recruit. We have, I believe the figures are out of 96 officers, we have 10 women. We have 4 African-American officers and 2 Asian officers. Now, you know, is that where we want to be? Not yet. But it's better than we were 20 years ago, I think.
In your inaugural address, you said that less than 20% of people trust the government. I like that word. But so my question is, does that extend to local government? And if so, how does Mayor Hamilton intend to address that issue?
Well, that's a good question. So that poll was really looking nationally, but it didn't say, do you trust the national government? It just said, do you trust government, as I said. I think a lot of people don't trust government. I've worked in government, you know, in different times through my career, and I grew up some in the Reagan era when you had the President of the United States saying, government's not the solution, government is the problem. Well, if you have enough people saying that over and over, people start to believe it. I love government. I will say this, I saw a quote I liked about government. It was actually focused on schools at first, but it said, I'll put government in instead. It said, government doesn't need unloving critics. We don't need people who criticize government without loving it, but it also doesn't need uncritical lovers. Those of us who love government, and I do appreciate government for what it does, need to be critical of it. So I've been a big fan of opening up the doors, transparency, letting people see what government's doing. I can tell you about our water quality and our parking meters and our, you know, all kinds of things that I want people to know about. I think the only way you build trust is by letting people see what's happening and being honest. When you make a mistake and tell them what you're trying to do, I believe government ought to say, here's what we're trying to accomplish. And if we get 90% of it, maybe we'll build trust that way.
Okay, for our listeners, we're here with Mayor John Hamilton of Bloomington. And I've got a lighter question for you. What has been your biggest surprise since you've taken office?
Well, let's see. I think my biggest, the biggest surprise was when I got into office and I found out that every one of our parking meters had to be replaced over the last year. I had no idea. I think we had elves coming in replacing them overnight. Nobody saw it. I just didn't know that the parking meters had all been failing and not working. So that was technically the biggest surprise I had, and I'll talk more about later this week probably how we've tried to fix that. But, you know, I it's been a lot of fun. I've ridden on the back of a sanitation truck, and I've gone up a cherry picker, and I've driven a street sweeper, and I'm partly surprised by how many different things government does. But I've not been surprised by how much people love Bloomington, and that's a nice thing. So,
mm-hmm. So also one of the issues that I saw on the city's website was the Certified Technology Park north of City Hall.
Mm-hmm.
What is that going to include exactly?
So the Certified Tech Park, we also call it the Trades District now, it's about 10 or 12 acres that the city bought 5 years ago or so, and it also defines another 50 acres kind of around it that are meant to be a place for technology jobs to be located and develop. We're not unusual in cities trying to do that. We purchased that property, and now my focus is on those 12 acres immediately north of City Hall, kind of between 11th and 10th, okay. And from Morton Street, a little west of College, over to Rogers Street and a little farther over. How do we attract good paying jobs in there? So we've been working on that. We'll be announcing some more things over the months ahead, but it's trying to, you know, we got one of the best informatics schools in the world. We're actually a lot of innovation going on in the medical field, of course, with places like Cook and Baxter. We've got a lot of small young companies that are doing really interesting things, like Envisage or Sigital or 39 Degrees North or Secretly Group, and all these kinds of interesting young companies. But a lot of it's kind of under the radar, those smaller ones. So one thing that Trades District or Technology Park tries to do is create enough common location and purpose that you kind of generate more momentum. You know, you get safety in numbers and more activity by being together.
All righty. Schools, our educational system. I know that was one of your main agenda items when you were running for office. Have you seen how's the progress been in this past year since you've taken office, and what would you like to see done that can be improved?
Well, so I served on the school board here for a while. I care deeply about schools. I'm a product of the public schools, K through 12, as are my kids and my wife. And you know, I think we do a disservice to anytime we don't honor and recognize how critical the role of the public schools have been to create opportunity for people in this country. And in my view, you know, 90% of our kids go through public schools. They're the future. They're defining the future of our country. So they're incredibly important. And when I ran for mayor, one of the things I talked about was, you know, I can theoretically do a great job on jobs and affordable housing and government, but if the schools aren't working in this community, people aren't going to come here. They're not going to be happier. It's fundamental to the quality of life here. So I said I want to work closely on the school issue. So this year, I think job number one is getting the referendum passed, reinstituted even at a little lower rate to make sure our public schools are well-funded. And I don't know how much I have a lot of disagreements with the way our state politicians have been treating the public school system. I think we're going some bad directions. So I think locally it just puts more pressure on us to do the right things and support the schools that we have and the teachers. So I meet regularly with Judy DeMuth, the superintendent. I've visited schools. I met with superintendent at North High School. I mean the principal at North High School, and I visited middle schools. And I just like try to, you know, be present with the public school system and a cheerleader for them. We have an excellent public school system, but it doesn't mean it shouldn't get better, and it needs to. And I want to be a partner with that. And you know, a mayor can help we both run big transportation systems. Can we do some things together? We both run big park systems, in effect. The schools do, and we do. Can we do things together? You know, we both have a lot of concern about what are we going to do during the summer for kids and how to help that. So I think there's a lot of ways we can work together, and we both care about what kids do after high school. Anyway, so there's a lot of work together. I think the number one effort this year is to get that referendum passed, so I'm working on that.
Well, I want to thank you as a member of the Status of Black Males in Bloomington. We've been able to speak to the schools a couple of times, and that probably wouldn't happen without the involvement of the city and the MCCSC. So thank you on behalf of our community.
So what is your position on charter schools? That's a good one, huh?
Yeah, so that's a complicated issue. I worked in a previous life in the Washington, D.C. area. I helped start a bank. I focused on the low and moderate income neighborhoods of Washington, D.C., doing affordable housing and community development and economic development and banking and opportunities. And in the Washington, D.C. system, school system, the public charter schools and the traditional public schools are really all under one control. The mayor there, by law, has oversight, and it's an integrated planning, budgeting, operation of charter schools. And so in a big city like that, charter schools are used to try to create opportunities, different focuses, specialty schools and such. Almost all the charter schools there are focused on kids who are not getting well served by the traditional public school system. There's not much cherry picking or that kind of thing going on. That's, to me, that kind of integrated system can work. I've seen it work. In Indiana, we have a terrible, in my view, public charter school system. Now, I'm not here to criticize any particular public charter school, because I think everybody is trying to find the best for their kids, and their, you know, the teachers are trying to find places to teach, and I don't want to criticize any individual, but I do think our system is bad, a badly designed charter school system, because it doesn't create a system of public schools with public money that is managed and integrated together to provide the best education for our kids. Instead, we get charter schools that are helicoptered in, basically from an outside entity that charters the school and says, oh yes, let's put a school in Bloomington. They have nothing to do with MCCSC and the people who are trying to serve the local community. So, for example, we just had a school chartered by a religious college in Northeast Indiana that chartered a public school here in Monroe County that's going to take kids away from the Monroe County school system and has no accountability to us. It's accountable to a board of directors of a religious school in Northeast Indiana, 200 miles away.
How are they still considered a public school, though?
Well, the legislature and the governor said so.
Who's funding this?
We are.
Are they taking money from MCCSC
yes.
for these charter schools?
Yes.
And they're not accountable to local government at all?
They are not accountable to any government. They are chartered by a private religious college. We have nothing to do with them locally, what they do. So that kind of charter system is a terrible structure, in my view. We haven't even talked about vouchers, which is a whole other question, because then you have the private schools that get public money through the voucher program. And that's, of course, Governor Daniels and Governor Pence are big supporters of this idea of taking public money and giving it to kids in private schools. And I think that's a big mistake.
Taking public money away from
the kids
MCCSC.
That really need it. Yes.
Absolutely. And, you know, the essence of public schools is if you walk up into our door, we educate you. We don't care your disability. We don't care your ability. Our job is to educate you. That's what the public school commitment is. And it's by law that's what the public school system, because we as a country and as a community have said that's the way we want to work. Well, charter schools are a little different. Private voucher schools are very different. And to me, it's a way that we're diminishing the effectiveness of this incredibly important public school system.
In our last few minutes, you mentioned your work in Washington, so I'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the presidential election at some point. But on a serious side, with a lot of the rhetoric that's going around in D.C., how is that affecting local government and things in our community?
Well, you know, that's interesting. I don't know yet how it... I have to say, I mean, I laugh when you ask, but I laughed instead of crying, probably. I mean, it's really distressing to listen to some of the words that are said and the voices and views that are shared. In a way, it makes me happy. Look, I'm just a mayor. I'm a mayor in a small Midwestern city, and I was born here, and I love it here, and we got a lot to do together. But on the other hand, you know, you can't put your head in the sand and ignore what's happening. I went to Maurer Law School, as you mentioned. Well, so did Judge Curiel, who's born in Lake County, went to school here, served his country. His brother went to Vietnam. He served. And you got a presidential candidate who says he can't rule on my case because he's Mexican. He's not Mexican. He's American. His parents came from Mexico. Well, our parents came from all over the place. She's an American. To suggest that is kind of it's shocking that a leading political figure says that kind of thing about our country. And what I hope and pray that the American public will make clear that, you know, this is a country that won't accept the kind of hatred and divisiveness or the idea that based on your religion, we're not going to let you in this country. I mean, it's kind of, some of this stuff is so hard to believe. Somebody said the other day, I heard a newscast say, what century is he from?
He's from the ones that a certain political group created.
Yeah. So the national stuff really matters here. It does really matter here. I'm really proud that our community has stepped up to express interest in supporting immigrants. Not many of us started here. Many of us, you know, came here under terrible circumstances, and many other people came here to escape other things. And the idea that as a community and as a country, we can't be welcoming to the next generation of immigrants is a bad thing.
In the last couple of minutes, would you like to just tell our listening audience about your vision over the next 4, 8, 12 years?
3.5. Well, you know, I love this community. I think a progressive place like Bloomington needs to show not only that it's a great quality of life and a great place to live, but that we prosper. Because we're in a debate, like how should America operate? What are the values that should drive our economy, our society? I think our values work well. I think they create innovation and opportunity. I'm working hard on making citywide digital infrastructure available because I think the digital divide is really important. I think the 21st century utility of high-speed, gigabit-speed broadband, we got to make sure everybody in this community can access that. I think investing in affordable housing so people from all walks of life can live in Bloomington so that even if you don't make a lot of money, you can have a great life here. We want people from all levels of income, all views of how you want to live, even all political views. You know, we're stronger when people voice all different kinds of views, and we need to celebrate that. I'm excited about the community and our future. I think we're blessed that we have a world-class university in a beautiful physical place with a culture that says we want everybody here. We want you to make our place better. We don't all think the same. We don't all look the same. We don't all believe the same. We sure don't act the same on Friday nights and Saturday nights. You know, there's a lot of differences, but that's good. And let's celebrate that.
All right. We want to thank John Hamilton, the mayor of the city of Bloomington, for joining us for a discussion on a variety of topics of interest, including his vision for the Bloomington metropolitan area. To learn more about Mayor Hamilton, visit him at www.bloomington.in.gov/mayor.
Bring It On has an open submission policy, so if you have any ideas for this program, we want to hear them. Send your emails directly to our volunteer staff. The address is bringiton@wfhb.org. We want to make sure we share everything and anything affecting the African-American community with our listening audience in Bloomington and beyond. That email address once again, bringiton@wfhb.org.
WFHB is the media sponsor for the Good People, Good Times Music Festival featuring Turbo Suit with Joel Cummings of Umphrey's McGee, Rumpke Mountain Boys, Derek Howard, and more. Good People, Good Times Music Festival takes place June 10th and the 11th at Stable Studios in Spencer, Indiana. Information and tickets are available at gpgtmusicfest.com. Support for WFHB also comes from the Uptown Cafe, a Bloomington landmark since 1976. Serving Cajun Creole and home cooking specials every Tuesday and Wednesday evening, featuring a full bar serving fresh handcrafted cocktails. The Uptown Cafe is located in downtown Bloomington. More information is available online at the-uptown.com.
It's all you keep waiting so long. You know, see me as superstar, man, I don't have time to waste with your minions and things.
See your face in front of me, still grainy from that old black and white TV. My whole family silent, watching you shape destiny with your two hands faster than the eye can see. Mesmerizing. You know what? Skinny little me started to strut. 10 years old, suddenly bold, cause I resolved to live like my hero in the ring. Be smart, never give an inch, no retreating. And I racked up respect from teachers, rednecks and creatures who attack in a pack like insects. Never seen the like, not before or since. A young prince, and I remain convinced that it's invincibility, athletic agility, virility, still a free spirit, forever through eternity, stinging like a bee, Mr. Muhammad Ali. From the belly of the beast rising like yeast. My release from low self-esteem came when I saw you rapping on my TV screen. Float like a butterfly that described my walk to school. After fight night I felt so cool, cause I was the greatest too. Love a self born simply out of love for you. And I knew someday people will love me too. None of the heckling about my black skin got through. I knew to walk barefoot through hell for you. It's how I felt back then and I still do. So if you accept these humble words of praise and my gratitude for those glorious days, I'm notorious ways instilled in a young mind, skills sublime, yours to mine.
You just heard Muhammad Ali, a song recorded by British dance band Faithless. It was released in the UK as a single in 2001 and was the second single release from the group's third studio album, Outrospective. The German release was a dual disc containing a CD audio side and a DVD side. Muhammad Ali reached number 29 in the UK singles chart. The single is about one of Maxi Jazz's heroes and major influences, Muhammad Ali, who inspired Maxi to believe in himself and rise above racial taunts when he was younger.
This is Bring It On, the People's Forum for Black Culture in South Central Indiana and beyond. Are you a Twitter? You're invited to follow the WFHB News Twitter account. This is a great way to get breaking news and updates on what's going on behind the scenes and on the air with WFHB News. Go to twitter.com and search for WFHB News, or you can always visit WFHB News website at wfhb.org/news.
You did mean, are you a tweeter, didn't you?
Tweeter.
Bring It On is Indiana's only public affairs program dedicated to the African-American community here on WFHB 91.3 FM and live on the web at wfhb.org. It's time now to give you the latest perspective on the people, news, and issues affecting the black community. For Bring It On, I'm William Hosea.
And I'm Cornelius Wright.
Well, let me see. Let's talk about the most important news over the weekend. Muhammad Ali, from fiery young man to serene survivor, dead at age 74. Monet Fields White of The Root shares that one of boxing's most legendary fighters, Muhammad Ali, died Friday, June 3rd in Arizona after being hospitalized for respiratory problems. He was 74. Ali had been in long decline as a result of the Parkinson's symptoms he developed soon after his boxing career ended. As celebrated as he was for his performance inside the ring, amassing 56 wins, 37 of them knockouts, in a career that spanned more than 20 years, his status beyond the ring evolved over the decades. The brash, graceful young athlete who targeted his opponents with boastful yet poetic taunts became a political warrior vilified for his controversial positions during the civil rights era before becoming a beloved, if increasingly silenced, elder statesman in retirement. Born Cassius Marcellus Clay Jr. in Louisville, Kentucky on January 17, 1942, he started boxing at age 12, winning his first bout in 1954 by split decision. Clay won the 1956 Golden Gloves Championship for novices in the light heavyweight class, and 3 years later won the Golden Gloves Tournament of Champions. He turned pro soon after winning the light heavyweight gold medal at the 1960 Olympics in Rome. At 6 foot three and 190 pounds, Clay used his quick feet and sharp jabs to dominate in the ring. He would use his mouth just as effectively, and from the start, often held court at press conferences. In one of his most famous self-appraisals, he declared that he could float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. He backed up his statements in the ring, knocking out British heavyweight champion Henry Cooper in 1963 and taking out Sonny Liston in 1964 to become the world heavyweight champion. Clay proclaimed in the ring after that bout that he shook up the world and provided more evidence the next morning when he announced that he had joined the Nation of Islam and changed his name to Muhammad Ali. By the late 1970s and early 1980s, Ali's career was in decline. He lost his last fight to Trevor Burbick in 1981 and retired the next day. Ali was diagnosed with Parkinson's syndrome in 1984, although he had been experiencing symptoms for several years, including tremors and changes in speech and walking. The link between his development of Parkinson's and the beatings he took in the ring is still disputed.
You know, when I heard the news that he passed away, I cried like a baby. I thought I'd lost a family member, a big brother, a mentor. It was so emotional. He meant so much to so many people, and wow, what a man.
He came to my high school back in 73, 74 maybe. And I remember, you know, TV didn't really portray him as he really was. He was a giant.
Big man.
And my brother and I were sitting there looking at my brother. Actually, I had a chance to meet him, but I was just in awe of this. He was huge. And then one of the guys from my class went out on the gym floor and started sparring with him. You know, it's all in fun.
Oh, yes. Well, one thing that we did get out of this were some reflections on his life in his own words. And these were the words from Muhammad Ali. "I would like to be remembered as a man who won the heavyweight title 3 times, who was humorous, and who treated everyone right, as a man who never looked down on those who looked up to him, and who helped as many people as he could, as a man who stood up for his beliefs no matter what, as a man who tried to unite all humankind through faith and love. And if all that's too much, then I guess I'd settle for being remembered only as a great boxer who became a leader and a champion of his people. And I wouldn't even mind if folks forgot how pretty I was."
Mm-hmm. That was another one of his trademarks, is, you know, his self-proclaimed beauty.
Well, at that particular time, I can remember in the 60s as a 10-year-old, and you did not hear very many black people. For one thing, I can remember the arguments from my father. That loudmouth needs to be quiet. He's going to get in trouble. You know, there were a lot of black people that were afraid for him because of his confidence. But to hear a black man say, "I'm beautiful," that was a first, and I'll never forget that.
"I never felt taller than when standing in Muhammad Ali's shadow." From Huffington Post, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar offers these sentiments. "During my more than 50 years in the public eye, I have met hundreds of renowned celebrities, artists, athletes, and world leaders, but only a handful embody the self-sacrificing and heroic qualities that define my friend and mentor, Muhammad Ali. A master of self-promotion, he declared early in his boxing career, 'I am the greatest.' This kind of boasting enraged many people, just as he'd hoped, ensuring a large audience that just wanted to see this upstart boy taught a lesson. But it was Muhammad who taught the lesson, because as he once said, it's not bragging if you can back it up. And back it up he did, again and again, and not just in the ring. Part of Muhammad's greatness was his ability to be different things to different people. To sports fans, he was an unparalleled champion of the world, faster and smarter than any heavyweight before. To athletes, he was a model of physical perfection and shrewd business acumen. To the anti-establishment youth of the 1960s, he was a defiant voice against the Vietnam War and the draft. To the Muslim community, he was a pious pioneer testing America's purported religious tolerance. To the African-American community, he was a black man who faced overwhelming bigotry the way he faced every opponent in the ring, fearlessly. At a time when blacks who spoke up about injustice were labeled uppity and often arrested under one pretext or another, Muhammad willingly sacrificed the best years of his career to stand tall and fight for what he believed was right. In doing so, he made all Americans, black and white, stand taller. I may be 7'2", but I never felt taller than when standing in his shadow. Today, we bow our heads at the loss of a man who did so much for America. Tomorrow, we will raise our heads again, remembering that his bravery, his outspokenness, and his sacrifice for the sake of his community and country lives on in the best part of each of us."
Don't let Muhammad Ali's story get whitewashed. History says we'll try and forget the boxing legend's radicalism. We shouldn't. Maxwell Strahan, the senior editor of the Huffington Post, writes the following perspective on Ali. "Heavyweight boxing champion of the world, Cassius Clay, who later changed his name to Muhammad Ali in 1964. Mere minutes after Muhammad Ali died on Friday at the age of 74, presumptive Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump called the boxing legend a great champion and wonderful guy in a Twitter post. The tweet provoked swift and justifiable anger. On its face, what made the remark so despicable was that it came from Trump, a man who has peddled Islamophobia consistently throughout his racially and religiously charged political campaign for personal gain. In December, Trump called on the U.S. to ban all Muslims from entering the United States. Around that same time, he implied that there were no Muslim sports heroes at all. And now, here he was, moments after the death of the most prominent Muslim athlete of all time, hoping you'd forget those two facts and let him take advantage of the moment. It was, depending on what you think of the businessman, either willfully ignorant or shamelessly cynical, requiring a sort of unique disregard for the past that makes Trump, Trump. But as I said last night looking at reality TV personality's tweet, I found myself thinking that what made Trump's sentiment so truly disturbing was that it actually wasn't out of line at all. Rather, it was, and is, right in line with a long-running tradition in U.S. history, whitewashing the radicalism of black Americans. And almost importantly, it is an eraser. Saying Ali transcended race banishes his long history of being uncompromisingly, beautifully black to the footnotes, just as the anti-Muslim Trump celebrate of Ali's whitewashes the boxer's history as a proud Muslim man.
You know, one thing I find interesting is here you have a black man who proudly proclaims his Muslim faith, and everybody, white America, loves him.
Right? They love him now.
Well, he's had positive relations and press coverage all along. But here you have a black president who is a Christian. They try and label him a Muslim, just for the express purpose of adding to the hatred. So there's some ironic, I think, what's the word I'm looking for?
Oh, that's it. It's ironic.
Yeah.
It's very ironic. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah. But I have always wondered why America had this love affair with Muhammad Ali, considering the positions he took and his outspokenness against racism and sometimes white people in general. You know, when Malcolm X had his problems with the Nation of Islam, Muhammad Ali took him in.
That's right. Well, maybe a little bit of guilt was involved. That was a look at American headline news from around the world for this week. Tune in again next week for the latest news on and for the African American community. We want to know what you think of current black issues. Send your comments to Bring It On at WFHB.org. For Bring It On, I'm Cornelius Wright.
I'm William Hosea, and you're listening to Bring It On, Indiana's only public affairs program dedicated to the African American community. Here on WFHB 91.3 FM on your radio and live on the web at WFHB.org.
Children are our future. Teach them well and let them lead the way. Show them all the beauty they possess inside. Give them a sense of pride to make it easier. Let the children's laughter remind us how we used to be. Everybody's searching for a hero. People need someone to look up to. I never found anyone who fulfilled my need. A lonely place to be. So I learned to depend on me.
chance that special place that you've been dreaming of leads you to a lonely place. Find your strength in love.
You just heard The Greatest Love of All by George Benson. The Greatest Love of All was written as the main theme of the 1977 film The Greatest, a biopic of Muhammad Ali. Michael Masser wrote the music. The song was written and recorded especially to be the main theme of the boxer Muhammad Ali biopic and therefore not part of Benson's career album, only later collections. The song was released as a single in the same year and was a substantial hit, reaching number 2 on the R&B chart, becoming the first R&B top 10 hit for Arista Records.
It's time to bring you the events of interest in the black community. For Bring It On, I'm William Hosea.
And I'm Cornelius Wright.
Here we go again with soul food, soul music, and soul fun. Raise funds while having fun. Saturday, June 18th, 6 p.m. to midnight at the Dan Owens Fraternal Order of Police Lodge on 2450 North Curry Pike is Mama Minnie's Juke Joint. $15 per person, $25 per couple. All proceeds will go to Resilience, Indiana's Untold Story, coming this October to the John Waldron Auditorium. For any questions, contact Liz Mitchell at emitch1441@sbcglobal.net.
And that's going to be a cheat day for me because I intend on going and enjoying all that good food. Relive the 90s with these summer R&B hip-hop concerts. Nothing inspires a trip down memory lane like hearing the music of our youth. The songs you used to turn all the way up with the windows rolled all the way down. You can revisit the 90s this summer at multiple concerts and festivals featuring the hip-hop and R&B stars who dominated the charts at the end of the century. Most were in Indianapolis, but to see some performers, you'll have to either take a short trip to Chicago or Cincinnati. Here's your lineup. Remember the 90s. June 18th Musical Festival at Bankers Life Fieldhouse featuring Keith Sweat, KC and JoJo, Mint Condition, Silk, MC Light, SWV, and Houdini. The Beat Summer Jam, I Love the 90s, August 13th at the Farm Bureau Insurance Lawn at the White River State Park featuring Vanilla Ice, Color Me Bad, Coolio, Tone Loc, Young MC, Rob Bass, Kool Moe Dee, and All for One. And at the Indiana Black Expo Musical Heritage Festival, July 15th at the American Legion Mall, you'll hear Blackstreet, Al Hudson in One Way, and the original Lakeside. The India Black Expo Music Heritage Festival 2 on July 16th at Bankers Life Fieldhouse, New Edition, Kim, and Drew Hill.
This is all live.
It's all live.
Wow.
Indeed.
So if you have an event or happening the African American community should know about, please send that info directly to the Bring It On staff. Or if you want additional information about a calendar item that you've heard tonight, you can contact us at bringiton@wfhb.org.
We want to thank John Hamilton, Mayor of the City of Bloomington, for joining us for a discussion on a variety of topics of interest, including his vision for the Bloomington metropolitan area. To learn more about John Mayor Hamilton, visit him at www.bloomington.in.gov/mayor.
Our show's executive producer is Clarence Boone, with help from WFHB News Department Director Joe Crawford. Our news editor is Michael Nolan. Tonight's board engineer is Floyd Hobson. Our original theme music was created by Jamil Effiam, with additional background tracks by David Baker. For WFHB, I'm William Hosea.
And I'm Cornelius Wright. Be sure to tune in next Monday, June 13th at 6 p.m. for another edition of Bring It On, right here on your community radio station, WFHB.
You
You've been listening to Bring It On, a volunteer-powered production of Community Radio WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana.
Bring It On is your forum for open dialogue on the people, issues, and events affecting the African-American community in South Central Indiana and beyond.
Send your comments, suggestions, and story ideas directly to the Bring It On staff. The email address is bringit@wfhb.org.
That's bringit@wfhb.org.